Welcome, listeners, to a new episode of the Story Explorer. Here in South Africa, we all got out of holiday mode after our long summer break. This year, I spent these 6 weeks reading some books I like to call beach reads. Beach reads are perfect for satisfying that longing to read and enjoy yourself while escaping into someone else's story, losing yourself in delight and wonder. At least, I think that's what we seek in these books. I believe we want to relive those childhood moments when we sat in our room, door closed, immersed in wonderful, thrilling adventures that always turned out all right. And of course, stories with a hero. Definitely, we want a hero. I read two books. The first was The Lack of Light by Nino Haratchvili. Haratchvili is a writer, playwright, and director from Georgia who writes in both German and Georgian. A few years ago, I read The Eighth Life by her, or at least I tried. To be honest, I didn't finish it. The novel was simply too long for me in the end. I enjoyed it a lot, but I think I left the last 100 pages unread. While everyone raved about it, I found myself getting bored towards the end. So when a Dutch friend gave me The Lack of Light during my visit to the Netherlands, I was hesitant. It was another thick book, almost 800 pages. I received it in August, but I set it aside at first. Then, at the start of the holiday, I decided to pick it up. I needed a long story to pull me out of work mode. Encouraged by my Dutch reading buddy, who absolutely loved The Eighth Life, I wanted to give this book a real chance. And it worked. I read The Lack of Light in Dutch, so I can't share exact sentences, but I found myself underlining passages, feeling those sparks we crave when reading, the kind that makes us want to remember certain sentences or thoughts. At this point, you might think this book is a love story with a hero who finds happiness. The strange thing is, it's not. And as I was reading, I kept wondering why I liked it so much. The story is actually about war, about teenagers growing up in the midst of conflict. A war in Georgia with Russia. I kept asking myself, how can I enjoy a story set in such a terrible war? A story whose characters are stripped of the lightness of being. These people live without toilet paper, electricity, or running water. They fight amongst themselves. They are struggling to survive. This story is told by one girl. Her name is Kito. She shares what happens to her, her family, and her three closest friends as they come of age during a war. One of her friends becomes a photographer, and their shared past unfolds as Kito visits an exhibition of her late friend's photos set in the present. As a photographer myself, this aspect really resonated with me. Photos often serve as triggers, glimmers of memory, and in that way, the structure of this story felt deeply familiar. Another powerful part of the novel is the friendship between these girls in their youth. As a little girl, I always dreamed of being part of a tight-knit group of friends. I remember the first song I ever loved. It spoke about the longing to belong to a group of girls, and that feeling has stayed with me. The characters in this book had that kind of friendship, but war tore them apart. Their closeness became too difficult to maintain as they grew into adulthood. I recognize that too. It's hard to hold on to deep friendships when life, distance, and circumstances pull you in different directions. For me, it's a painful realization. Yet in this story, the photo exhibition forces the woman to come together. This somewhat forced reunion rekindles their bond, despite the war, despite the years, despite old wounds. And in the midst of it all, Kito finds a lost love, leaving me with a sense of closure as the story ends, giving me some of the happiness I crave for in a beach read. Despite the horrific events in this story, despite the war, the wounds, and the trauma, I still believe this is a perfect beach read. We are no longer children, so reading is no longer just about distraction or identifying with a hero. It becomes something more, a way to understand others, to step into lives different from our own, even when we are on the beach. Or is it not? When I finished this book, I was on a short beach holiday in the Western Cape, South Africa. As a family, we loved the beach, the sand, the sea, the wind. And since I had been hearing about another book, one centered around water, I was determined to get a copy. I had already seen this book multiple times at exclusive books in Joburg, so I figured it wouldn't be hard to find it in a general store near our holiday home. While doing our grocery shopping at Noordhoek Mall, I had spotted a big bookstore. So I told my husband and son to drop me at the entrance, wait for 10 minutes, and hopefully I'd come out with the book. After all, who wants to spend too long in a mall while on holiday? Not us. I returned to the car in complete amazement. This bookstore, called Wordsworth, had blown my mind. It had not only been a quick visit, the bookshop itself was inspiring too. The staff immediately knew which book I meant. They responded warmly, telling me how many of their readers had loved it. They even tried to help me find another book by the same author, one my Dutch reading buddy had recommended. They walked me to the back of the store, showed me other titles by her, but unfortunately that other one wasn't there. So I decided to stick with the one they did have, her latest. I'm always helped nicely at exclusive books in Rosebank, Hyde Park and Sandton. But to find such an incredible bookstore in a small mall in Noordhoek, so well stocked, with such knowledgeable and helpful staff, was unexpected for me. Johannesburg, by comparison, feels incredibly lacking in great bookshops. There are two big chains and a small but well-curated independent store in Melville, and that's about it. This discovery reignited a familiar frustration in me. I believe David Goldblatt would call it an itch. Years ago, I attended a lecture by David Goldblatt wherein he explained that when he noticed something and then felt an itchiness in his body, he knew he had to photograph whatever was causing it. I think I'm doing something familiar here. I have to mention this difference between bookshops in a tiny place in the Cape and this million big city Joburg. Why doesn't it have more great bookstores? Why isn't there at least one good independent bookshop in every suburb? What does this lack of choice say about us Joburgers? Just a question in my mind. But I got my book and I could finally start my next beach read. I was happy. A while ago, my book buddy, okay, I realize I've mentioned her a few times now, so let me properly introduce her. My book buddy, Hilly van Hassent, lives in the Netherlands and reads about 90 books a year. Yes, really. 90 books. We met while working at the book division of the biggest department store in the Netherlands. At the time, I was a confident, opinionated young book lover, quick to blurt out my verdict on whatever popular novel was making the rounds. I still remember the first time I shared an opinion with her, and instead of frowning at my bold opinions, Hilly burst into laughter. She didn't agree with me, but rather than arguing, she was simply curious. She just asked, "Why did I think that?" From that day on, we have shared our reading experiences, and she has relentlessly recommended books to me. What keeps bothering me, though, is that I can never keep up with the sheer number of books she reads. And for a while now, she's been bugging me to read The Epic of Gilgamesh. This is a Mesopotamian poem written on clay tablets. That's how old it is. This work is seen as one of the first hero archetypes. It is known because of its influence on our literature and philosophy. Unfortunately, this book is hard to find in Johannesburg, so I haven't gotten my hands on it yet. But it's on my list, especially after reading my latest beach read, There Are Rivers in the Sky by Elif Shafak, because that's the beach read I'm talking about now. Elif Shafak is an award-winning Turkish-British writer, essayist and activist, and she has published more than 20 books. I believe her latest novel, Rivers in the Sky, is structured a little like the Da Vinci Code, a book most of us know and loved. It follows three main characters, separated by time and place, yet connected through the ancient story of Gilgamesh, recorded on a special clay tablet. But that's not the only link between them. The novel also revolves around water. Water which never truly disappears, it evaporates, but always returns, carrying traces of everything it has touched. If we can accept this idea, the story becomes a beautifully woven tale about the interconnectedness of past and present. Of course, this might not be for everyone. Those with strictly scientific minds may find it a bit far-fetched. But if we allow ourselves a little make-believe, we can embrace the story fully. The first chapter introduces us to a king from the distant past. He treasures stories, yet totally distrusts storytellers. Their imagination is impossible to contain. Storytellers create twists and turns, changing course unpredictably, meandering in wild and unpredictable loops. I believe this book is Elif Shafak's invitation to us to read and to follow the winding course of a story, even if it doesn't seem entirely logical at first. Before I begin to read a book, I always look for its motto. A motto offers a clue about the story, a hidden thread that connects to its deeper meaning. Not all books have one, but many do, and I find them fascinating. Most of the time when I first read a motto, I don't fully understand it. Then, after finishing the book, I revisit it, and suddenly it clicks. That's what it means, I think, having that satisfying aha moment. This book, however, has four mottos. Normally there's just one, sometimes two, but four? That intrigued me. I won't share all of them, as I don't want to spoil anything for you, but I'll share this one. In those days, in those far-off days, in those nights, in those far-off nights, in those years, in those far-off years, in olden times. Did you see the sons of Sumer and Akkad? I saw them. How do they fare? They drink water from the place of a massacre. Tablet 12, Epic of Gilgamesh, translated by Andrew George. I don't know much about Sumer and Akkad. I haven't read the Epic of Gilgamesh yet. Whenever I read a book, I always keep a pencil with me. I underline sentences that stand out. Ones I love, find interesting, simply want to remember. Once I've finished the book, I go back to the beginning and reread all the underlined sentences. I do this to uncover the deeper meaning of the story, to try and understand why the author wrote it. This method often brings clarity, revealing patterns or truths that might not have been obvious at first. I did the same with this book. I believe the sentences I underlined can be pieced together to solve the puzzle the writer created for us. They hold something essential. They are truths worth remembering. And later, after I finish the story, I will see if I can piece my underlined words together to understand what the author was really trying to say. Let me talk you through a part of this process. First, I'll look closely at the motto from The Gilgamesh. I see four themes in it. The first four lines speak about the past. The next one mentions people. Then we hear about water. And finally, there is a massacre. When I looked through all the underlined sentences in this book, I found multiple sentences resounding with each of these themes from this motto. I will not mention all, but I will give an example of a sentence that sparked my interest for each of these themes. The first underlined sentence is about the past. Gilgamesh wished to conquer death, and so he traveled to the ends of the world, but he failed. He did not see that the only way to become immortal is to be remembered after you have gone. And the only way to be remembered is to leave behind a good story. The second theme is about people. The sentence I underlined is, more and more, he comes to realize that people fall into three camps. Those who hardly, if ever, see beauty, even when it strikes them between the eyes. Those who recognize it only when it is made apparent to them, and those rare souls who find beauty everywhere they turn, even in the most unexpected places. The third theme is about water, and the sentence I underlined is, "The story of humanity cannot be written without the story of water." And the last one is about horror, a massacre. Remember, though, what defies comprehension isn't the mysteries of the world, but the cruelties that humans are capable of inflicting upon each other. So, what you just heard me say is what resonated with me in this book. It's a bit like photography. Each photo reflects the perspective of the photographer. A single image never captures the full picture. It only shows what the photographer chooses to frame. The same applies to reading. The words I've picked out might not be the same ones you would focus on. Each reader brings their own perspective and makes their own meaning. I hope this will inspire you to always go back to the motto, after you finish the story. Because one thing remains true for me. If we believe a book carries a certain meaning, we must be able to find it within the text itself. Now that we have identified some key themes of the story, I'll reread the motto to you. In those days, in those far-off days, in those far-off nights, in those years, in those far-off years, in olden times, did you see the sons of Sumer and Akkad? I saw them. How do they fare? They drink water from the place of a massacre. Do you get it now? The motto makes more sense now, doesn't it? To me, the theme of this book is how we, as people, are connected to each other through stories and water, and how, despite this connection, we are somehow unable to prevent massacres from happening. I realize you might find this difficult to follow, especially if you haven't read this book. Yet, it's not about understanding exactly how it matches here, but if this inspires you to look again at the motto of a book after you've read it, I'm quite sure you will experience that satisfying aha moment that I talked about earlier in this episode. I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Story Explorer and that you'll find time to read more. Looking forward to hearing your thoughts and having you tune in for the next episode. Have a great day!